Hello and welcome to It's a Gundam, the internet's best episode-by-episode Gundam Seed podcast that finished War in the Pocket and decided it wanted to see a real nuclear incident. My name is Jeremy.
I can pilot any mobile suit one-handed. I'm Tyler.
Why he needs that particular skill, we're not going to ask. My name is Zach.
So I can play Dead or Alive Gundam Volleyball, I guess.
You've heard of the Gundam girlfriend seat, but now... Today we're watching Episode 7 of Gundam 0083, Stardust Memory, with Shining Blue Fire, or its English title, Burning Heart. Neither of these are good names for this episode. They're both good names.
I prefer the Blue Fire one, generally, but...
If you haven't been listening along with us, and you started last podcast where we didn't do this, Gundam 0083 is the story of Ko Uraki, a test pilot with no known backstory, who was... on a base in Australia with his bro Keith, when a cool battleship showed up with two hot chicks on it. And Ko was like, "Oh man, look at that hot Gundam that hot chick brought."
And the hot chick is like, "Look at that hot Gundam I brought."
There were actually two of them. One of them was a Gundam designed for shooting nuclear missiles. Anna Velgato, the coolest Notchar Aznable you've ever seen, stole the one that shoots nuclear missiles. So now Ko and the hot chicks and Captain Synapse have to go after it. Also, they got backup, but they're the worst. They went to the moon because they're like, maybe Anna Velgato went to the moon. And Ko met a guy who looked like Guile. But that guy, Kelly, was secretly an ex-Zeon pilot who was fixing up a mobile armor so he could join the Dalaz fleet, the Zeon remnant that Anna Velgato belongs to, that declared war on the Federation. Also, they hired Seema, an ex-Zeon space pirate, to join them because they didn't have enough dudes. They being the Dalaz fleet, not the Federation. The Federation also doesn't have enough dudes. And so they were like, Albion, you can do this with six guys, right? Okay, thanks, bye.
Well, they saw all the success that the White Base had in the 1 year wars. They were like, so if we remove all of their support, they'll do much better, right? That's how that works?
Yeah, no, it's you split the combat unit strength between all the units. So like it gets you more individual shots if you have more units, but the one shot that you do fire from the one unit is stronger.
Also, Nina and Ko aren't dating.
They're most explicitly not dating.
Yet.
Alright. Again, we are watching Episode 7 of Mobile Suit Gundam 0083, Stardust Memory, with Shining Blue Fire. You can watch along if you find it at a DVD store, and it's just one episode ripped onto a DVD. We start with a shot of the moon, and some explanations about last time the Gundam got fixed, Ko got fixed after he got broke, and also Kelly's mobile armor got fixed. See, last episode, everything got fixed.
Except Ko's nose.
So the episode begins with Ko dicking around in the GPO-1 Fulverdian, and by dicking around, I mean testing scientifically.
I mean, that's also known as dicking around.
There's something wrong with my G-Flutterer.
There's not. There's nothing wrong.
I assume that's just like his gyro or something. Then he does an awesome flyby over the Anaheim lab.
Babes?
The Anaheim lab babes.
That's their football team, right? The Anaheim babes? I guess it would be the Von Braun babes. Anaheim doesn't sponsor their own football team. Nina starts simping for Gundam Senpai.
And Mora is like, Nina, you gotta focus on work.
So Ko heads back in because all the tests are complete. And random mechanic's like, how did you like the Fulburnian? He's like, it's outstanding. And they're like, next time, let's try for 160 units. And Nina's like, "Ah, no way. This machine can go all the way up to 230 something.
Yeah, 230 speed.
You know, are we talking KPH, MPH?
Also, they're in knots. Space, so there shouldn't really be a maximum speed.
I think it's a unit of acceleration, because when Nina says that it can go up to 230, Ko's like, that would literally kill me, so...
That just means he needs to train harder, like Zex and the Tall Geese.
Or cut off his legs and replace him with metal things like Star Fox.
Also, Nina laughs at his joke, which, you know, as an insecure guy, tell a bad joke, if she laughs, she's into me, is my move.
She also grabs a data disk.
And she's like, I put my whole heart into this Gundam, for your sake. And then she giggles.
And Ko does not know how to react to this.
And then she's like, now, Ko, let's go hang out. And he's like, this seems like a trap, but... Then we see Keith, and he's like, ah, I've made my decision. And he flags down Ko in the lobby of Anaheim, I guess?
He is also wearing a...
civilian garb.
It would only be better if it was acid wash jeans, because he's wearing like a jean vest with a bunch of patches on it.
A pink shirt, and then the jeans.
Salmon, thank you.
Also, oh man, one of the patches on the back, I forgot about this, the patch on the back of his vest just says, Thunder.
Well, he's a big Oklahoma fan.
They weren't there yet.
In the space 90s, they weren't. You would know better than I. So Keith is like, Ko, we don't know when we're going to get leave again, right? And Ko's like, oh man, you saw us? And he goes, how the hell could I not see you? Nina knows how to put on a show.
Also, here are some tickets. Ask her out, you dweeb.
I do love how he's like, a high school kid could have done better than you.
And therefore, the name of the episode, Shiny Blue Fire.
That.
Is this a reference to anything that you know of, Jeremy?
No, I was going to take this in an entirely different direction, which is, as a kid, I really thought like movie tickets were a thing you like needed to get from places, because that happens in media all the time. Is that a 90s thing, or is that a media thing, or is that a Japan thing?
It used to be a thing you could do. Everything switched to basically doing at the counter or will call, kind of in the mid-90s, and now everything's online, so.
I mean, I think it's supposed to be a band of some kind.
No, he will say they are movie tickets.
Oh, yeah, he does say movie tickets.
Shining Blue Fire is a rad name for a band, though. Burning Heart, the other episode title, the English one, is the name of the opening theme, so that's something. This is just a rejected name for Domonkachi's special attack.
But after Keith gives Ko the tickets, Mara shows up, and apparently Keith and Mara are going out.
I love how Chuck is dressed up like kind of punk, and Mara's like in this extremely prim and proper, like, it looks like business out attire to me.
Well, you see, they're going to a, oh man, I have such a good joke, but the words aren't coming. What's the play that's not Romeo and Juliet?
Hamlet?
West Side Story. They're going to a West Side Story cosplay roleplay event, and they're going to be on opposite.
And she's Maria.
Yeah, yeah. And he's one of the punks.
Well, why did you start laughing after I spoke?
No, I was laughing at West Side Story because that is not remotely what I thought he was going for. So. It is not Romeo and Juliet, you're correct, but...
So what do you think about this hookup? Because I felt it was kind of jarring, but I also think it's like kind of supposed to be from Ko's perspective.
I think it is a little jarring, but at the same time, we as the audience have seen them together pretty consistently for the past like 3 episodes.
In my notes, I wrote, he fell for her when she deflected him from Nina in the first episode, so...
Even then, you're like, oh man, Chuck, what are you doing?
Yeah, go on a date with the Amazon lady. What are you talking about? Insert Joe Cat meme here.
And Ko is absolutely dumbstruck as they leave.
Well, to be fair, everyone else appears dumbstruck too. Like all the background guys.
All the random businessmen who are here and business babes.
They're like, how did the short guy pull the Amazon lady? What the heck?
I just find it, like, I really expected, like, Mora's date clothes to be anything but what she's wearing.
Cut to the junkyard where Kelly lurks.
And, man, I already forgot her name. Latoura's like, I'm a big fan of the Backstreet Boys. No, that's NSYNC. Tell me why. Or is that the Backstreet Boys?
No, it's NSYNC.
Okay, yeah. Well, I got there eventually.
I'm pretty sure it was NSYNC. I haven't thought about either band for, like, 20 years.
You have a very different internal life than I do. On the other hand,
we already know this. I don't spend any time thinking about the Ninja Turtles at any point in my day.
We no longer have Ninja Turtles brand pizza at work, so I no longer do either. But
That is Backstreet Boys. I did just look it up.
Okay. I was just about to say, I believe there's no scientific evidence to prove that Backstreet Boys and NSYNC are different in any way.
I think the only thing is that everyone from NSYNC went on to do things, and no one from Backstreet Boys did.
One of them voices Sephiroth.
What?
Really?
One of the members of NSYNC is the voice of Sephiroth and has been for some time.
Lance Bass got trained as an astronaut. Which is kind of cool.
So Kelly's like, Latoura, please try to understand. Masculine pride. The 90s. War. Punching people.
And she's like, I'll show you what I think about punching people, and throws his helmet on the ground. Which Kelly does not take particularly well. He clearly understands that it's upsetting her, but he's like, but I gotta do what I gotta do. It's my pride!
Well, I think it's also a little bit of one of those situations where it's like, I'm not entirely sure what to do besides be a pilot, because that was what he indicated to go in the previous episode.
Well, Tara, don't you know my tragic backstory? I know you do, because you told it to Ko.
He's also, it has been kind of established, he's not really much for talking, so.
True.
It does not surprise me that he has not just had a conversation with her about this. It's also really ambiguous what their relationship is.
Yeah, she's his daughter, friend, girl, wife, man.
Meanwhile, Geodude doesn't want any trouble on the moon.
He's telling this right to Seema, who's like, ah, so you mean you don't care what happens off the moon? Thanks for providing the Dalaz fleet with some cool weapons.
It's Lunarians like you who are throwing the worlds into chaos. You mean, you know, war profiteers? Yeah, they
yeah,
kinda
yeah,
do
yeah,
that.
Kinda.
And he's like, no, I just want to help you out, Mistress Seema, because I think your sunglasses are really cool.
And she's like, well, if you want to help us out, why don't you give us less crap mobile suits? And he's like, what if I give you the least crap mobile suit?
And she's like, I'm listening.
So we'll probably see that one in the next episode.
For the low, low price of some of Char's Nazi gold.
Char isn't here.
No, this is Dalaz's Nazi gold.
Has Char's counterattack happened yet in the timeline?
No, that's like 13 years from now. Yeah, that's 0096.
Yeah. Okay. This is before even Zeta Gundam.
Okay.
Because remember, the 1 year war is in 0079?
Yes.
I don't know what the timeline is. It was a 1 year war that lasted for so many episodes.
Gundam, OFMS team, War in the Pocket, this, Zeta Gundam, double Zeta Gundam, Char's counterattack, Unicorn, Hathaway's Flash.
Oh, did that come out ever?
Yes, it did. Gundam narrative happened somewhere in there, but we don't talk about that. Cut back to Anaheim Electronics, where all the babes are staring at Nina because she's giving off the I have a date energy. I don't know. She's just coding and being serious.
She's doing it for Co.
And all of her business babes are just staring at her, gossiping about her while she is just working. What is this dynamic? What are they all doing here?
I assume it's after hours and Nina's the only one still working and they're all just waiting for her to stop.
Well, like, it was the, it was, you know, just in time for them to all call it quits for the day and Nina's still going.
Yep.
And she's like, there are just some things I want to get done before the Albion leaves. And they're like, you're going back on board? And she's like, we need cool data on the Gundam, don't we? And then the girls are like, oh, that's so romantic, being on a battleship. But then number one business babe comes in and is like, the chief wants to see you, Mina.
I really want to go on the Gundam Wiki and edit one of her aliases to be number one business babe.
Well, Nina's the number one business babe. She's Nina's number
one. Yeah, Nina's number one. That's fair. Nina's number one business babe.
But her boss is like, Nina, so anyway, we're transferring you to, because you're not allowed to be on the Albion. You can tell I take my job very seriously because I'm actively building a Gunpla while we're having this conversation.
Is that what he's doing?
Well, he's got the cutting mat, and I can't see those as anything but runners, and he's filing down a nub on something.
Oh, I assumed that he was
cleaning his nails or something.
That's what I assumed as well.
Yeah, I think that's what he's supposed to be, but he clearly has a cutting mat and a runner, so. Anyway, you can do research on not a Federation ship, right? Besides, I have an obligation to your parents to look after you. You have a backstory, right, Nina? She's like, not as far as I can tell.
I mean, I had a bad breakup,
I
guess.
Don't you, Nina? That ship is definitely going to go fight the Dalaz fleet. That's going to be dangerous.
The executives want to get the ship out of here. And she's like, can't I have time to think about all this? And he's like, no.
I've got my own family to support, which apparently they'll fire him if she goes with them.
That does seem to be the implication. Cut to Seema's pirate bro being like, wow, Kelly, you really did get it fixed in one day. Here, have this Nazi gold. It's not Char's, but it's almost as good. And he's like, yeah, cool. I just have to settle things with my not girlfriend, or maybe she is my girlfriend, and then I'll be able to join up with you guys. Holy crap, this is a lot of Nazi gold. Are you sure?
And so Pirate Guy's like, just think of it as your payment for keeping my mobile armor up to snuff.
And Kelly's like, Nani?
This is going to be my mobile armor. And Kelly's like, what? But my male pride! And he's like, you didn't think Seema was going to let a one-armed cripple pilot this mobile suit, did you? Ha 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 ha. I'm laughing in your face. A totally reasonable thing to do. Ha 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 ha.
Especially to a brick shithouse like Kelly.
I feel like at this point, why does Kelly just not say, like, no? Like, I mean, he could. Well, he didn't, like, make a deal or anything. He could just give the gold back.
Also, the other little thing that I don't think Twat is thinking about is the fact that he was explicit when he said he modified it to be one-handed.
I think what happened in the background, I think what we're going to get from one of the future scenes, is Seema specifically said, okay, we're definitely not going to let him pilot it, right? And the guy's like, yes, I will pilot it. And she's like, okay, go make sure that we pay him for it, and then we can take the suit from him later. And this guy was like, okay, I will rub it in his face. And Seema's like, wait, the what? No, no!
I have to go mate with a Geodude. It's very important. Don't mess this up, though.
Oh, no, it used magnitude 7.
So nobody is getting what they want at present, apparently.
Back at Anaheim Electronics in their internal park, which actually does 100% seem like a thing a future dystopic company would put in their building so you never had to leave work.
It's like a ping pong table.
Only you can read books if you're a business babe.
That one looked suspiciously like Chris. So
Mina brings up Ko's page on Wikipedia, laughingly.
I call this military-grade stalking.
This just seems like social media stalking to me. And she's like, Ko, help me. I'm no longer fulfilled by my job.
Meanwhile, cut to Kelly, watching Anna Velgato send him a love note.
Apparently it was a message that he sent him before he went to Australia.
I think that is the implication, yes. Because I think Kelly is now dealing with, like, I feel betrayed. Gatto, you said you were going to be my friend and pilot or co-pilot again. We do see that
Kelly
has
gotten into bourbon.
Yeah, we do see that he at least has the money for Bourbon Deluxe.
Well, he might have used that Nazi gold for this, though.
Oh, that's fair. I assumed he was going to give it all to Latora. But
he might have kept a shaving or two.
Well, I assumed he was going to, but then he got sad about this guy laughing, coming to his house, taking his mobile armor and laughing at him. So he bought some whiskey first. And then watched his old tapes of Anna Belgato being like, Lieutenant Kelly Leisner, you're a cool bro. Come help me save Zeon. And Kelly's like, Gatto, what are you doing? I feel like you haven't been in this show in like 4 episodes. Anyway, we cut to the Albion where Synapse is getting a speech about how time for us to go fight the Dalaz fight by ourselves, I guess. Sorry
it's
about
fine.
The short notice, everybody.
I was trying to look up the name of the office babes, and none of them have Gundam entries on the Gundam Wiki, which is sad.
Do you think I would be so disrespectful to them if they had names?
I just really wanted to update that one.
And Synapse is like, don't be racist against Lunarians for kicking us out. They did give us a cool Gundam.
Those here on the moon live different lives. And Ko's like, that's not true. I love Nina. I mean, what?
I should go ask her out with these movie tickets.
Meanwhile, cut to Seema, slowly undocking.
I love how she immediately takes off her sunglasses and puts her hair down and puts on her pirate outfit.
I know.
As soon as she gets back on her ship, they're not even outside the moon docking bay yet.
Yeah, like if someone heralded her.
She's more comfortable that way.
Yeah.
I mean, her pirates are also wearing their Zeon uniforms, so.
Yeah, but I assume they just never left the ship. They didn't need to pretend to not be who they are.
I catch.
We cut back to Anaheim Electronics, where all the business babes are leaving, but Nina is still there, brooding.
Partially because she's trying to decide whether or not to pull ranks, not the right word, but like to get on the Albion with everyone.
And then number one business babe, who stayed behind, is like, hey, you have a guest. Ko Araki, I think? And he's like, oh, hi, Nina. And she's like, not my boyfriend.
And so business babe is like, hey, wink, good luck, and then leaves.
And Kev's like, oh, so cool office you have here. Good, clean.
I like the Gundam poster.
How to flirt.
And he's like, hey, you look upset. Did bad happen? And she's like, there are complications. Don't worry about it. And then she sees the tickets in his pocket as he sits down. And he's like, oh. And he's like, thanks for the seat. Man, the air conditioning sure is hot in here.
Is it hot in here, or is it just my awkwardness? As he crams the tickets back into her pocket, and Nina's like, hell yeah, Chansu.
I do kind of love the way this goes, where she, like, knows, and so she just starts teasing him. Like, it's the same flirty energy she had a few episodes ago, but it feels way more natural for her.
They've built up to it at this point in a way that makes it feel better. She keeps laughing at him, stumbling over his words, but she, like, gets super excited when she thinks he's gonna ask.
Yeah, well, then, he's like, I've never done this before.
And then she does the cutest little, like, and then he asks about, like, propulsion thrusters or some shit because he can't get his nerve up.
Yeah.
And she's like, you idiot. And leaves.
Yeah.
Well, she has a moment first about, she's like, yeah, what about pulse motors, you dumbass? You had better have the best flirty pun that I did not think of.
He's like, well, there's some noise. And she's like, what noise? And he's like, oh, it's nothing. And she's like, God damn it, Ko Araki.
Kind of think this is an overreaction just because of how, like, she was teasing him, right? So she, like, clearly knows it's hard for him.
And he's, like, a couple years younger than her, I think, canonically. So, like...
Definitely he's coded that way, right?
I looked it up. I think she's 21 and he is 19.
Gotcha. So she runs out dramatically and Ko is like,
what the hell did I just do?
I knew I was bad at this. I didn't know I was this bad. Graduate time. And he runs after her.
To be fair, later we will see Nina being like, man, I really screwed the pooch on that one. So,
but and number one business babe does run interference for her friend. And you're like, God damn it. Are mobile suits the only thing you know how to handle?
The answer is yes.
No, no. I know how to handle mobile armors too.
Well, no, he apparently knows how to fix them. Doesn't mean he knows how to handle them.
Well, he can fly that thing one-handed. It's been built for that.
I mean, if he could fly it two-handed, I suppose.
To his credit, Ko's like, okay, I screwed up, but I still have time.
Yeah, the show's not for another plot hours. Cut back to the junk farm, where Laterra's like, Kelly, please open the door. I know you're in there brooding with your mobile armor. Let me talk to you. But he's in his like, Zeon uniform.
I'm too broody, and I've already dressed in my pilot outfit.
And then we cut to Nina FaceTiming her dad while pointing the phone away from her. Like me today when YouTube was like, hey, I'm not going to open unless you give me access to your microphone and camera.
What? Why?
That's a great question, Google. Why are you listening to me?
You know, based on what that guy said before, I kind of just assumed that her parents were dead.
Yeah, it does read that way. But he's like, come on, Nina, you should come home and live with us. Stop being a career woman. Come on, at least let me see you with the video phone. And then she's like, oh, I'm going to come home, Dad. I'm basically fired. And my not boyfriend is bad at asking me out. My life is basically over.
But her dad is like, your mom's going to be happy.
And he was talking about her brother earlier, I think.
Yeah, when your department chief told us you were on a Federation cruiser, we were so worried. And then she cuts him off.
And then she rolls over and she's like, man, I really screwed up. And basically, like, goes fetal position and starts crying.
And then she says, time to just quit. Which is the most Ko Araki move she's ever made. Cut to Kelly booting up his mobile armor. He's got lots of very, very satisfying tactile switches as he does so.
And apparently has control over at least one of the doors.
Cut to Sima's ship where they're like, Sima, the spaceport number 3 airlock has been opened. And they're like, wait, that's the bay where we're supposed to pick up the Valwallo. Who named it? That's a terrible name for a mobile armor.
Awful name.
Where's Valwallo?
And it's and she's like, it's too soon.
And then the pilot dude realizes it's his fault, starts to run away, and Sima's like, it's your fault.
She corners him with her fan and is like, I hate men who butt in where they shouldn't. Tell me what you did. But then there's an explosion, and the Valwallo takes off, and Laterra is sad about it, as she loses a slipper over it.
Yeah, I noticed her shoe fell off. I'm like, when did that happen? How did that happen?
Well, all the other workers are like, what the hell?
The Valhalla, to its credit, does look huge, and I kind of like that. We cut to the Albion, which is about to launch.
Her name's Paula. We get a first name for her.
Number one business babe has come to collect Nina's luggage and tell off Ko Araki one last time. And Ko's like, tell me why? But before you can find out, there's an announcement that there's an enemy mobile armor approaching. And all visitors leave. All your luggage is forfeit. Burning, you have to show all the girls out.
Oh, she does have an entry. She's just not listed on the Stardust memory page at all.
Wait, does she have a last name?
She does. Gwilish.
Gazundite.
Oh, so she's the commander of the Space Marines.
The official name that they gave her here is Poral Gwilish instead of Paula, but...
So are you going to edit the Wikipedia page to note that she is Nina Purpleton's number one business babe?
I'm going to put it in there somewhere and see how long the change lasts before it gets rejected.
I don't know that people are looking at that page very often.
That's why I'm hoping it'll be a while. I'm just going to put it in our aliases section. That's just AKA Nina Purpleton's number one business babe.
And Ko is like, wait, a mobile armor? I might know that guy. I probably do.
So we got the Sima ship just blasting and dropping a Zaku. I do kind of love this, like, makeshift mobile shoot launch thing where the Zaku's just, like, in a crate connecting to the ship that they drop. And Sima's like, well, looks like Kelly snapped. Now that he knows I'm not going to take him in, he's going to surrender this mobile suit to the Federation. So you're in charge of stopping him, guy whose fault this is.
Although she did misread him because that was not Kelly's motive.
Yeah.
He was not going to turn it over to the Federation, so.
I wonder if she knows that and is just like, well, I was planning to turn him down. Obviously, now I'm not going to get the Valhalla without his approval. But I am going to get rid of my subordinate this way. Clearly, I cannot trust. I wonder if she is acting when she says this and gives this order. I'm not sure on that. That's just kind of how it read to me.
It's hard to say because she is talking out loud on the bridge. So, like, is she just talking or is it for her crew?
Like, is she just thinking or is she just thinking out loud?
Yeah.
I think it's mostly when he's like, how am I supposed to stop a mobile armor on my own? She knows he can't, right?
Yep.
So that's why I think this is entirely performative. But because if she actually believed that, I think she would take bigger steps to stop him.
Because she does say, take responsibility for actions, even if it kills you. So she is just trying to get rid of this guy.
She's like, my home planet needs me. Bye.
And then the Valhalla charges this poor lone Zaku.
And when Kelly's like, you're going to fire on your own guy? And then he gets run over by a Valhalla.
Which just cuts the Zaku in half. I don't think it even has weapons there. I think it just rams it.
That is how it starts its melee attack in Giren's Greed, is it just rams in and then does a circle and claws. Ketanina coming into her job, presumably to fire because she's in civilian clothes, and she overhears some security guards talking about a battle going on outside. I'm like, hey, it's on TV for some reason.
Well, I mean, if these are security guards, they may have access to external cameras.
I'm trying to decide if I like...
Does... have the big AE logo, so it might be an Anaheim Electronics, and it's like a security checkpoint.
Yeah. I'm trying to decide if I like her outfit or not.
I do, but I'm a sucker for a yellow dress, is kind of all it is.
It looks good on her. I'm not sure I like the belt or, like, the sleeve caps.
I like the sleeve caps and the, like, black on the neck, because black and yellow is a good look. I do agree the belt's a little, like, it's the right accent, but it's, like, the wrong shape of an accent.
Yeah, I think that's my problem with it, too.
Anyway... the TV is like, this is Kelly Lasner, Federation ship, do you read me?
And she's like, Kelly?
And he says, I want to challenge the Gundam.
She never met him. Did Ko tell her about him?
I don't know. Like, I don't think he told her. Does she know him from someplace else?
I will say, this was when I was like, oh, we just changed directors, didn't we? Huh. but we didn't, actually. So, as we went over last episode... this is the final episode directed by the initial director of Stardust Memory. I was thinking this was the first one by the new director, but that's not the case. So we cut to the Albion, where everybody is scrambling to launch. And Ko's like, is it really a mobile armor? Why, Mara? And she's like, man, I don't know.
What the hell are you trying to ask me?
I didn't randomly meet anybody on the moon and help them fix a mobile armor. Did you?
Ko does ask, you know, is it Kelly, but why is he kind of like, why is he doing this? And I think that's more a matter of, like, he didn't actually expect Kelly to try and pick a fight with
him. Well, not immediately, anyway.
At least
right?
Not immediately. He thought he would, like, maybe go back to the Dalaz fleet and then it would be over.
Well, he did overhear his conversation with Seema, which is what it seemed to imply, right? That he was going to join them and, like, maybe they'd have to fight, but yeah, definitely not. And then as we're about to leave, he's going to launch an attack. The helmsman starts setting a course, but Synapse says, no, that'll make it look like we're using the city as a shield. Go up higher. So there's no chance of them getting fired on.
And, of course, the captain asks the obvious question, is this guy nuts?
As he almost skims the top of the city, he definitely messes up the edge of the crater a little bit.
And he's like, I'm not looking to fight any gyms, you hear me? Send out the Gundam 1v1 me on the moon, or I'm gonna blow up Von Braun.
Gundam or bust.
1v1 final destination, no items at Baron.
And before Synapse can be like, what's going on? Ko's like, yes, sir, I am ready to launch. And Synapse is like, God damn it. I mean, I guess tell him to launch, but God damn it.
And Kelly's like, cool, Gundam I can smash.
Gundam fight ready, go. And Ko's like, Mr. Kelly, why? And Kelly's like, Ko, you're the Gundam pilot?
Initially, I was like, didn't he already know that? But then it's like, no, he knew Ko was a mobile suit pilot. Yep, he did not know he was the Gundam pilot.
But Kelly quickly pivots and is like, well, it was bound to happen sooner or later.
I did tell you that the next time we met, we would be enemies.
I just wasn't expecting it to be tomorrow.
And Ko's like, neither was I.
Don't do this. Don't make me fight you.
And he's like, don't be naive. Nobody can choose the conditions of a fight. Like I showed up and threatened to destroy a city if I didn't get exactly the fight I wanted under the conditions I wanted.
For some reason, that really strikes a chord with Ko. I don't feel like it's that profound a statement. Anyway, he fires a big fuck-off laser at Ko, which melts the Gundam shield, which looks rad as hell.
It's the way it, like... is animated boiling from the inside.
Yep.
Very cool. Anyway, Ko gets sideswiped. And then we cut back into the colony. Or I'm sorry, into Von Braun. I guess it's a moon colony, right? Yeah. Colony just means something in Gundam, and it's not this. And they're like, hey, what are they doing fighting on the moon? Don't they know there's all of Earth and space for that?
And they're locking the place down, and hey, there's somebody who's just taking, like, a lighter outside.
So when that happened, I was like, is it Nina or is it Latora? And I'm like, dramatically, I feel like it needs to be Nina, but...
Yeah, I agree with you, because literally what I thought was like, oh, I wish I didn't know story so well, because that's obviously Nina. I'm like, actually, you know, it could be Latera. I know it's not, because I've seen this before. But, like, actually, there is a reason to be ambiguous here, because either of them could work narratively, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Nina is the one that we need the screen time for Ko for, though, so...
Yeah, but they could be separated for a while.
Yeah.
And that could add drama. Anyway, Ko and Kelly are exchanging fire. But Kelly's got big AoE beam attacks that explode, and Ko does not. So Ko just gets being blasted around the moon. And Ko's like, you're throwing your life away. What would Latera think, Mr. Kelly? And he's like, yeah, you heard Delos's cool speech, though. All that matters to a soldier is the fight. And Ko's like, that doesn't seem right to me at all, actually.
So and he deploys...
some pods.
Like electric shock pods.
The classic Gundam weapon. And Ko sits there for like 2 minutes waiting for them to charge up and blast him.
Well, at first he thinks they're like dud bombs. So he's like, oh, well, they didn't go off.
So Ko's getting electriced like a good Gundam pilot does.
But the Albion's here. And also Chuck.
He's like, Keith. And Chuck's like, can I go, Captain? Can I go? And he's like, sure. Mansha and the others aren't in this episode.
Yeah, I was like, why weren't they sending out any of the other characters?
I have an answer for you. They're all hungover.
Well, Mansha certainly is.
Anyway, Nina's space tractor has gotten here. She's the one who left.
And apparently she knows Kelly.
And she's like, stop, Kelly. Isn't it enough for Gato to do this?
Again, I'm like, do they meet or something?
Like, is he part of her nebulous backstory? Did the author forget that Nina hadn't met Kelly
I think
was
maybe
getting her
that.
Mixed up with Latera?
I did accidentally just stumble across Nina's nebulous backstory.
Oh, you just discovered why I don't like Gundam 0083, huh?
I think maybe, yes. Yes, it might actually be part of that, too. So it could go either way. I don't think we ever get an explanation, though.
Anyway, while distracted by Nina being here, Kelly gets shot at by Keith. But Keith, even though he's better, even though he's gotten a date, still misses. And Kelly starts shooting at him, but instead he hits Nina's tractor, sending her flying. And he's like, oh no! And Keith is like, oh no!
But he does manage to take out two of the electric things.
And Ko takes out the last one. And he's like, Nina! And Nina is floating beautifully through space. Because in space, nobody can stop your momentum.
So she just kind of, like, awkwardly falls onto the moon. Because the moon does have gravity.
Eventually.
But this causes Ko to be very, very angry.
He turns into Ko-Hulk.
Go Hulk smash puny mobile armor.
Aralki? I don't know.
There are some cool shots of him trying to shoot it with a beam rifle and missing.
I do also really like the mobile armor just doing like a dead straight up turn. It looks really cool.
It's done it a couple of times. I love the maneuverability of the mobile armor.
It brings me to the problem I always have with mobile armors. I don't mind them as a thing that exists in universe. The problem is as soon as you build one, why are you building any more Gundams?
Yep.
I mean, it does depend on what kind of mobile armor you're talking about, because isn't technically, like, the Psycho Gundam in the Big Zam classes mobile armors?
I don't think the Psycho Gundam is. I think the Psycho Gundam is just really big Gundam. But...
it does have a mobile armor mode. It does turn into a flying triangle to shoot you sometimes. It's not a plane. Let me be clear. It's a triangle.
So Ko takes cover behind a dune and finally gets some shots on it, and Kelly's like, ah, my armor's basically Gundanium from this distance. Pew-pew!
But Ko gets behind him. And also pew-pews, ineffectively. He doesn't make one little hole in the Vowallo. But then he gets claw-crabbed.
I didn't realize this thing had crab claws. Everything's a crab. All mobile armors are crabs.
Well, it's the natural end of all evolution, you
yeah,
see.
Carcinization? I wrote it down. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's fine. So Ko detaches the top half of the Gundam, which is not a thing I knew it could do.
Again, this is very original Gundam, because the GP-01 has a core fighter, presumably for the same reasons that the original Gundam had a core fighter, because they thought the data was more important than anything else, because it is a test machine. That makes sense. And the Gundam's core fighter would deploy by the top half shooting off and the bottom half shooting off. So this all makes sense, but we haven't seen it from the GPO-1, and I think this would be a lot cooler if it was set up. As, like, even if they just tested the escape system while they were doing all the tests, so we knew he could do this, and then he did it in the middle of the fight, then I think this would really work. Whereas, like you said, Tyler, I didn't know it could do this.
I mean, I didn't know that's how the core fighter worked. But they did reference that it had a core fighter in the beginning, so if you had seen, like, the original Gundam and remembered it when this came out, you would know this would, like, that he could potentially do this because it is equipped with a core fighter.
Is that how Gundams work? I didn't know!
I also do really like it for the full Verdian because it's got, like, explicit shoulder thruster things, so it seems like this would actually be a very useful combat tactic. Actually, why do I need legs in space?
Very good question, actually.
It has no legs.
So anyway, he pops off and then beam sabers it. And Kelly's like, Nani the fuck? And I agree, Kelly. I don't know what just happened.
Well, you see, he detached his torso because he doesn't need legs and stabbed this guy. And he's like, Ko, do you hear me? I regret nothing!
So Ko is like, Kelly, bail out!
He's like, I didn't build a bailout system.
I do love how Kelly's last action, presumably, is to chuck the Gundam's legs away so they don't explode with him. Katasima, who hears about how her cool Valvalo blew up.
And Geodude's like, I told you not to get in a fight on the moon. And she's basically like, piss off, asshole.
I love how her actual phrase is, bite me.
Yep.
It gives Seema so much character,
I love her.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate her, but I love her.
Yeah. More Gundam series need to copy Seema, right? I want to see the Gundam Seed version of Seema so bad. I guess that's Ezak's mom.
She just doesn't get enough screen time. That's fair.
I'll cut back to the moon where there's a giant explosion still going on that pushes Nina's comatose body along the moon.
Anyway, she wakes up from having had a concussion.
By getting another concussion by running into the Gundam's hand.
And Ko pops out of the cockpit.
To be like, Nina, what the fuck are you doing here? I mean, do you want to see a movie with me? I mean, are you okay? She's like, Ko.
He's like, anyway, bail on your job and come hang out on the Albion with me. And she's like, hell yeah, I'm pretty woozy. I can't think straight, but yeah, okay.
I was going to quit anyway. Maybe I did. I don't remember.
I did just hit my head pretty hard.
Anyway, they Sound of Music.
I mean, it is pretty cute. I'm making fun of the fact that she definitely had a concussion, but like, it's not played that way at all, so.
No, I think it works pretty well. I wish there was maybe a little more emphasis on, like, Ko's, like, oh man, I want you to be with me forever is way overly dramatic. But for a teenager who's never had a relationship before, I actually kind of think that works.
And
although
after
I think
this
is,
kind of effect, or yeah, this kind of event.
Although I don't think that's the way the series intends it. I think that's supposed to be genuine.
I mean, it might be genuine for him, but.
Anyway, then the episode ends on the Albion leaving for some reason, and it feels like they were just like, oh shit, we promised the viewers that there would be at least 20 more seconds in this episode. Shit, let's throw this in here.
Because I do like the laser propulsion thing, that's kind of cool.
It's fine, I don't mind it, it's just like, the episode clearly should just end on the Ko and Nina bit, right?
Yeah, it's got a tableau and everything, I don't know why we got that last 20 seconds.
It very does feel like they got everything set up and then we're like, oh shit, we've still got a little bit of time we need to kill.
And that's the end of the episode. There's a lot of stuff about this episode I do like, but there's something about it I can't quite put my finger on that I don't.
I think the problem with the action generally is that mobile armors just aren't as dynamic as mobile suits.
I think my criticism there is, but they can be more dynamic, right? Because they've got a different and interesting shape. There's no reason that Ko couldn't have cut off one of those crab claws, right? The problem is that they don't do anything with it, right? We were super praising the fights on Earth for all the use of terrain and stuff, but this is just Ko going, pew, 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 and Kelly being like, I am invincible!
Yeah, I think that's a lot of the problem that they do. Like, with this fight, there's no... He's invincible all the way until he's not, and Ko wins on a move that, unless you're paying close attention and knew how the core fighter worked on the original Gundam, you don't know he can do. So it feels like an ass pull victory more than a, oh my, this guy's actually really cool because he thought about how to win.
It feels like pocket sand to me.
Like I said, I think we have that scene of them testing stuff at the beginning. Why not test the escape system? and we see how it works. So then when he comes up with a cool alternate use for it, it feels like he did something clever instead of, oh, I guess it can do that. And I guess beam sabers work against this thing that can just deflect the beam rifle.
But he did specifically say that beam rifles won't work again. Beam weapons won't work at that distance.
Yeah,
implying
he did.
That close range is a different story.
Yeah, presumably they have some sort of long distance attenuation. I think the thing that sums this up for me is this is the most Recomgeese and G fight the show has had, where it's just like, oh, okay, I guess the Gundam can just do that now.
It also feels really weird that Mancha, Chip, and Alpha just aren't in this episode. That's actually the biggest reason I thought maybe directors had changed, because Mancha has been pretty much a presence since he was introduced, right?
Yep.
As much as we hate him, he's a kind of overwhelming presence. So even if they're, like, don't launch because of Kelly's threat, it feels really weird they aren't here at all.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was a situation where instead of, you know, the 20 seconds of the Albion leaving, you put in that 20 seconds of them basically demanding the captain or burning let them sortie in order to take on the mobile armor, and they keep getting denied.
Especially given that Chuck gets to go out, right?
Yeah, because Chuck does go out, and, like, they're demanding to go out, and then Chuck just does it because he's getting laid now, so he's got the confidence to do so.
Like, you don't know that. They're just dating.
I mean, he's farther ahead than the other guys are, so...
Do you have a high point, Tyler?
I'm not sure. I was trying to think of one before you asked, so that I didn't have to flounder like this, and I honestly am not coming up with one. I guess it's actually going to be the ending scene. I really, like, it's a little cheesy, but I...
You mean where the episode should have ended and not the
actual
ending scene?
not the Albion taking off, but where Ko and Nina embracing after all that nonsense. Because it's both what they clearly wanted, and they're just bad at communicating.
Zach?
I think my high point might actually be Ko tripping over all of his words trying to ask Nina out on a date.
It's really funny, honestly.
Poor guy. I think mine is going to be Seema's bite me. Like, kind of Seema in this whole episode. Her dealing with her subordinate and then the end of just like, I said no trouble on the moon. And she's like, you fuck off. I am going to drop a colony on you actually just for that. I wasn't going to, but now.
Just because you annoyed me that way.
You have a low point, Tyler.
So I feel like it's understandable given the character setup that we have and presumably the amount of alcohol involved, but I feel like Kelly's entire performance in this episode is cool guys don't look at explosions, especially if they're inside of them.
I didn't put an escape system on.
Why?
Very killdozer of you.
Zach?
Mine is going to be the 20 seconds of the Albion leaving after the actual episode's ending, because it is the perfect ending right then and there between Ko and Nina, and they're just like, let's staple this other bit on here to ruin it. So, what's your low point, Jeremy?
It's hard to say without spoilers, but, and it's like, I kind of like that we are implying Nina has some backstory and we've been doing it slowly. Like, you talked about how it was implied that her parents were dead by the guy being like, I said I'd take care of you. But I actually think that line combined with her parents not being dead, like, creates more mystery of like, oh, are her parents some people that are important?
Presumably.
And I kind of like that. And I also kind of like her being like, oh, Kelly, weird. But like, there's some stuff that we're going to get to that I don't like that is for the first time hinted at here. But like I said, those are spoilers, so I feel like I can choose something that's more on the nose. And I guess it'll just be Mancha not appearing in this episode, because that also feels super weird to me.
I am also just now realizing that her parents probably are some or important, because she's extremely young to be the lead system engineer on a project this important.
Although clearly she is capable of it,
well,
right?
Yeah, no, for sure. But, like, the fact that she got into that position in the first place is unlikely.
Nepotism.
Yeah, anime. Exactly. Yeah, no, I'm saying nepotism. Anime nepotism.
Do you have an MVP, Tyler?
I think it's actually Nina for me this episode. I feel like she... One, she's kind of active. And two, she's, like, got a lot of fun character moments. We get to see her reacting to a lot of stuff, and sometimes in fairly amusing ways, so...
Zach?
I think it's Ko again for me, because he's also got a lot of character moments, most of which are related directly to Nina. He's got the big, you know, damn hero moment there. He's got the whole, like, proclamation of love.
It's hard for me. Nina does have the best flirting face, and so that's good. I gave Seema my high point, so I don't really want to give her MVP as well, especially since she's pretty passive in what she does. Kelly nearly earned it last episode, but this episode he mostly just explodes for no reason. So I guess I'm going to give it to Nina? Yeah. Let's put the Val Wallo on her mobile suit list.
It's pretty boring.
Yeah. Again, just comparing it to the Zamzaza, which is also a mobile armor with crab claws, I feel like that fight's way more interesting, right?
It definitely is, yeah.
It's all, the Zamzaza is just like a way weirder suit, I think. This is basically a plane with some claws on it.
I don't think it's as good as the Armor Zagan from Reconquista NG.
For basically the same reason, I feel.
Definitely not as good as the Destroy Gundam as far as giant enemy threats go, right?
No.
Nope.
Yeah, no, the Destroy's got a lot more going on, and it's also a way bigger threat the first time you see it.
It's also a Big Zam.
What if a Big Zam was also a Gundam? Turns out not much, actually, is the answer to that.
How do we think it compares to the Yggdrasil?
Which is interesting.
It's a pyramid, it shoots out trees, it's got a lot more visually interesting, as weird as it is, right?
I prefer the Val Wallo to the Yggdrasil because I don't like pyramid-shaped craft very much.
I am going to give it to the Yggdrasil just because it is weird. It is not visually cool, but it's weird, and I kind of like it for that.
I like the Valhalla more than the Exis, which is Neo Roanoke's, not Mobius Zero.
I think I agree, because Exis is basically just, hey, here's the Mobius Zero. You guys liked that, right?
I mean, we did. I think probably more than most people, but...
Okay, final question then. Better or worse than the Forbidden Gundam?
Which ones are forbidden? I always forget.
It's not the Death Scythe from Gundam Seed.
Oh, okay, that one. I think I like the Forbidden more.
I think I like the Val Wallo more for its crab claws.
You know, you'd think I would agree because I'm a sucker for crab claws, but...
I think I have to give it to the Forbidden. I like scythes, and I like the beam deflector that it has.
All right, so the Val Wallo will go at number 167, above the Exis and below the Forbidden Gundam. And that will do it for this episode. Anything you guys want to say as final thoughts? I don't hate this episode, but it does feel like it's missing something. I can't put my finger on what. I don't know if it's just that it concludes with the Konina relationship coming to something, and it was so awkward coming to here that that doesn't feel earned, or what it is. Because like I've said before, I remember really liking the Konina relationship from this show, and I don't know what past Jeremy was on.
I'm not sure, like, I don't feel strongly one way or another about this episode. Like, yes, he did kill a guy that he made friends with, but at the same time, like, I didn't spend a great deal of time with him myself, and it was just kind of like, okay, here's this random dude.
I think my problem overall is that while in character, Kelly's choice makes sense, it is not very interesting, and the fight that ensues is not very interesting, and it takes up a lot of the episode. And I think all the stuff that happens before all of that is more interesting than anything that happens after that.
And I think the most damning thing is this is the least interesting fight we've had in this series so far, right?
Yeah, by a wide margin, I think.
Because even Seema, like, just totaling the Gundam has, like, a novelty to it of you so rarely see something so one-sided as that.
And it's animated, like, particularly brutally, which I think, like, gives it a lot more weight than it would have otherwise.
All right, join us next week then when we will be watching Episode 8 of Mobile Suit Gundam 0083, Stardust Memory, Conspiracy Sector, or its English title, Conspiracy of Silence. That's more of a sentence, but Conspiracy Sector sounds fun. That's my favorite level on Star Fox.
Oh, it sounds like a band to me.
Stardust, remember to listen next week.